elk general seasons and special permit regulations. Another decision with Jerry Nelson to walk us through it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This next agenda item is our request to have you adopt the elk general season and the elk special permit seasons for 2014. These are WACs 232, 28, 358, and 232, 28, 360. You have the presentation in front of you. All of the proposal is in your notebook, and in addition, as part of the proposal package, I will have a couple of floor changes right at the end for you. And you have seen most of this information already at the Moses Lake March briefing. There are a few things on this table that were pending at that point, and most of them had to do with our March elk surveys. And so I'll just run through this as quickly as I can. On the Yakima population, you're still seeing the same recommendation from us, a slight increase in both bull and antlerless special permits. On the Clackamas, this is one that's always on everybody's mind. We did complete the flights, and I will talk about that in a couple of more slides. We really were hoping that our post-hunt bull ratio objectives would be met this year, and they were not. But I'll have some discussion on that as well. The population is quite a bit above objective, and it has been increasing the last 4 years, including the estimate for this year. And so we are still recommending an increase in the antlerless special permits and a slightly smaller increase in the bull permits, and I'll explain that in a minute. Blue Mountains flights were completed. No surprises there. We're sticking with our recommendation that you saw as status quo on the bull permits. Mount St. Helens flights have been completed. I told you at the March meeting that I'd be coming to you with some reduced antlerless special permit recommendations. These completed flights reinforce that, and so I have those final numbers for you, and you have those final numbers already in your notebook, and so we're coming in with a fair bit of a reduction on antlerless special permit opportunities. The intent there is to try to stabilize the population at this lower level where we have them now. The Nooksack population, those flights have been completed, and we're recommending status quo on the bull permits, and I'll have a little bit of discussion on our cutting back on the antlerless permits in a couple of slides. And then again, for the rest, status quo recommendations on the rest of those elk populations. And so focusing first on the Clackamas herd, this was a question mark at the March meeting. Our estimate for the Clackamas herd this year as in total is a little over 6,000 animals. So as you can see, in the last 4 or 5 years or so, we just continue to climb, and we've got an awful lot of elk on that landscape, and they are a good deal higher than we feel objective should be. And so we are recommending a fair amount of antlerless hunting opportunity through special permits this year for the Clackamas population. As I mentioned, our post-hunt bull ratios still didn't reach objective. The year before, we had managed to get to 10. We're shooting for 12 to 20. This year, we came in at 6, which was a little disappointing, but I have a little bit of an explanation as to why. The good news on Clackamas elk is that the Clackamas yearling bull harvest is looking pretty good with less of a cost, and I'll explain that as well. So if you look at the last 2 years, we implemented the true spike antler restriction here in 2010, and you'll notice that in 2012 and 2013, those yearling bull harvest numbers are coming up. But more importantly, our yearling bull survival is staying up. And so this is the yearling bull recruitment estimates. These are basically the yearling bulls that have survived all of the hunting seasons and are likely going to make it to their second birthday in June. As you can see, back in the middle 2000s, the number of yearling bulls that were being recruited into the population after the hunting seasons were really kind of dismal. And now, after implementing the true spike rule, those numbers have come up, and that's looking a lot better. The other good news on this is just the percentage of the total yearling bull subpopulation that's being harvested. Again, if you look back in the early 2000s, we were often harvesting upwards of 80% or more of the yearling bulls that were on the landscape. That's higher than we see in any of our other elk populations that are under a spike-only rule. Since implementing the true spike rule, we're seeing a proportion of the yearling bull population being harvested as less than 70%. This past year, 64% was the estimate. We're doing a lot better in other populations and in this population as well. If we're ranging in the 60 to 70% harvested yearling bulls when we're using a true spike regulation or any kind of a spike-only regulation, excuse me. I mentioned last time that we have implemented a clock and bull research study. It's planned to be a three-year study, and it was initiated in September. We still have 27 mature, or at least adult, bulls on the air equipped with GPS radio collars. And as I mentioned before, this project includes a graduate student from Central Washington University. Now, this is one of the stories I wanted to tell today, and these were, as I mentioned before, these were some of the objectives of that research project. And if we could get maybe the lights down just a tad, but if you look at this map, this is the Columbia River right here. This is Vantage. Right here is where the bridge where the bridge crosses the river at Vantage. This is I-90 leading over to Ellensburg over here. And so this light blue part of the map is what we have traditionally called or historically called traditional winter range for the Clockham population. And so that's where we do our March aerial surveys, in this light blue area. So each one of these dots represents one of those 27 bulls that have a radio collar on them. The little dots that have a double dot, a yellow dot in the center, that represents two bulls that are at the same location. So if you counted all these up, you'd see that we have all 27 bulls on the map, but you've got four up here that aren't hanging out in the survey area, actually five. You've got another group of five or six over here. I guess that's 2, 4, 6, 7 over here that aren't spending their winters on traditional winter range where we conduct our surveys. We have another four bulls down here that aren't on the traditional areas where we survey in the wintertime. So this all harkens back to this last point right here, and that's adjusting the survey protocol. So as we continue to learn where these bulls are spending their winters, and of course these are just the marked bulls. There's no indication about the unmarked bulls, but all of these marked bulls are probably associating with unmarked bulls in the wintertime. And so we're going to have to figure out some adjustments on how we survey Clockham elk. This is something that we've suspected for a long time. A lot of our hunting public have had theories and conjecture about. Now we've actually got some real information to turn to look at this. And so we will be exploring new ways to survey Clockham elk in the future. Of course, one of the challenges there is that helicopter time is incredibly expensive, and this is starting to look like a very large landscape. And so we'll have to figure out a way to best do that in a cost-effective manner. And so that long-winded explanation gets us to the Clockham special permits that we're recommending. As you'll see, because of the bull information that we have now and the post-hunt surveys, we are still recommending a slight increase in the bull special permits, but they aren't as high as we suggested they might be at the March meeting, a little bit lower than that. And then, of course, these antlerless opportunities that we're proposing in the special permits, those haven't changed. We still think those need to be that high to try to help us get a handle on that population. So shifting to the northwest part of the state, the Nooksack elk population, our recommendations there are going to be keeping the number of bull permits stable, both the types of bulls and which weapon groups those are distributed within. And then we're recommending that the antlerless special permits in elk area 4941 be eliminated except for the master hunter permits. And I'll bring you back to the March meeting in Moses Lake. As you'll recall, we had some testimony from one of the members representing the Stillaquamish tribe and also representing the Point Elliott Treaty tribes. And we were still in working negotiations with folks up there to try to figure out where we were going with those antlerless special permits. And so our final recommendation coming to you, and there will be a couple of floor changes related to this, are to essentially eliminate those 4941 antlerless permits, and we're going to be dealing with more of the valley floor wildlife damage and conflict situations using master hunters and also through our wildlife conflicts section. And of course, we will continue to work with the Point Elliott Treaty tribes on Nooksack elk management into the future. Shifting over to the Mount St. Helens special permits, we talked about this in March. We are recommending a much lower level of antlerless elk special permits. These are just the four GMUs represented here, Winston, Margaret, Calweeman, and Tootle. These are four GMUs that are very much core to the Mount St. Helens population. And as you can see, back in the early 2000s, we weren't offering very much antlerless opportunity. We wanted that population to be at a lower level to try to get it more down to what the landscape support. We increase that opportunity, and then we really increase that opportunity the last 3 years. We feel like we've got the population at a better level now, and so we're recommending reducing back to this 2009-2008 sort of level in that neighborhood, and hopefully getting some stabilization now at that lower level. I'm not going to go through this entire table. This is the table that I showed you at the March meeting. As a result of the March flights that we did in Mount St. Helens, you'll see that some of these numbers are even a little bit lower than we suggested they might be at the March meeting. And so grand total, recommending cutting back from a little over 1,300 to about 700 antlerless special permits on those Mount St. Helens GMUs. And of course, we can't talk about Mount St. Helens elk without talking about hoof disease. I did go through all of this information in March, and we had a lot of excellent help from our veterinarian, Kristen Mansfield, at that meeting, so I won't belabor this either. But just as a reminder, there are an awful lot of hoof diseases out there in ungulates, and some of them are species specific and have a lot of different causes. In the hoof disease in elk that we're seeing in Southwest Washington, we're seeing it in both genders, we're seeing it in all ages, and the hoof does not matter whether it's front or back or left or right. Did want to point out that we have an awful lot of cooperators that are helping us with this investigation that we are reaching out to. And this is not a complete comprehensive list, but it gives you an idea of some of the folks we're working with. A large number of pathologists, microbiologists, and veterinarians at Washington State University. We're also working with experts at Colorado State University, UC Davis, the USDA National Animal Disease Lab, and even the University of Liverpool in the UK. The good news is we're starting to get a lot of similar results from all of those labs. This is just a summary of the animals that we've collected to obtain those samples up to this point. Everything from adults down to 3 to 4 month old calves and everything in between. That's finally starting to pay some dividends, and we're starting to get a better direction on what might be causing the problem. We've looked at almost 50 elk, 27 from the affected areas, other animals from areas that we were trying to use as controls, and right now there appears to be an association with treponema and elk hoof disease. It's a bacteria that is known to be associated with hoof disease problems in domestic cattle and sheep, and so we are continuing to pursue that. On the information dissemination side of things, we've held some public meetings. We've developed an online reporting tool to allow the public to report animals that they see limping. Public working group has had, I think we might be up to 4 meetings now to date. Public stakeholders group that has a lot of interest and is helping us work through this issue. We also have a technical advisory group that's more on the scientific side of things. They've got another meeting coming up soon. And, of course, the increased outreach information in terms of in the form of brochures, the more detailed information that we're going to be putting in the big game pamphlet this year. And so we're going to continue this work with the other agencies and entities and universities that are helping us with this problem. We will continue to meet with the public working group and get their input. And we're also going to continue, obviously, to work with the technical advisory group. And our next steps are, again, really trying to understand what the cause of the disease is, and then starting to figure out what our management options might be and what our direction might be. The technical group is planning to meet in June, and we're hoping to brief the commission just as soon as we've got some more solid final results that we can bring to you. And so our elk season recommendations for 2014 are, again, status quo for most of the seasons. We're at the end of a 3-year package and don't have a lot of recommended changes. We're proposing increasing the antlerless special permits for both the Clackam population and the Yakima population. We're also proposing some antlered special permit increases for both Clackam and Yakima. Slight increases, but we think those populations can handle that additional opportunity. And of course, we're proposing reducing the antlerless special permits for the Mount St. Helens population. And as previously noted on the deer wax, there's adjustment up and down on the special permits via the allocation formula when those permits are offered to all 3 user groups. And we're always paying attention to agricultural damage, and so we have to adjust antlerless special permits to address those issues as well. And so on the floor changes that I told you about, the first one is related to the general season hunting seasons, and it's a typographical error. If you turn to page 6, maybe we could get the lights back up so folks could see their notebooks. But if you'll turn to page 6 in the Elk Agenda section, under the late archery section, GMU 342 was inadvertently put in the true spike bull and antlerless category. That should be in the spike bull and antlerless category. 342 is not part of the Clackamas population, and it shouldn't be under that true spike regulation. So that was a typographical error that we need to fix. And then on page 16, proposing to delete the youth Skagit River hunt in its entirety. This is part of our continued negotiations and working on the Nooksack elk population and trying to best deal with how we're going to handle antlerless removals and wildlife conflict, wildlife damage. And then on page 17, the same types of corrections on both the 65 and older Skagit River hunt and the hunters with disabilities Skagit River hunt, those four changes to delete those as well. And so all of those, with those deletions, all of the antlerless opportunities and mitigating damage will be handled by the master hunter category and also our wildlife conflict section using their tools that are available to them. Do the floor changes make sense? Okay. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Questions? Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As sort of the token commissioner that lives in Skagit Valley, those last floor changes, as relates to just injecting the master hunter into dealing with these problem elk, is going to be a problem. I can just tell you up front, I've already been spoken to about it. I'm not suggesting it's the wrong way to do it, but the average hunter up there that would seek some opportunity to harvest an elk, benefit the situation, won't be able to. And pretty much locked out of the master hunter opportunity. So there's probably going to be some pushback, Jerry.
I understand that. I guess the only thing that I would offer is that the antlerless opportunity that we're recommending to pull back right now, both some were already in your notebook and these floor changes, those were new opportunities. So they didn't exist before, but you're right. You're absolutely right.
We'll be hearing about it.
Any other questions? Commissioner Holtzmiller has a question.
And there again, I am fairly clueless. I've just heard, how are you going to address the elk issue in the Skagit Valley?
Well, we still have 25 permits in the master hunter category, and so the way those function is they're a second elk opportunity for the master hunter, and they're essentially an on-demand kind of a hunt. And so when we have a landowner that has an elk damage problem, we have a hunt coordinator that will go down the random list and call the next name on the list and say, we need you here in 24 hours or 48 hours, can you make it? And we'll show you right where to go and remove that animal for us. So it's more strategic. It gets us right to the actual problem. And if that hunter can't make that commitment at that time, their name will go to the bottom of the list. They'll call the next name on the list, and they'll just continue to cycle through the list until they either take care of all the problems or run out of hunters. The other way we'll address the problem is through our wildlife conflict specialists. And so they have damage permits, kill permits, those sorts of things that they can use to also address the ag damage problems.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Commissioner Smitten, are you ready with the motion?
Thank you, Chair. I move to amend WAC 232-28-358 and 232-28-360 as proposed, and floor changes as recommended.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
That.
The motion's been made and seconded by Commissioner Smith to amend WAC 232-28-358 and 232-28-360 as proposed and amended with floor amendments. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries.